Old Mother Hubbard went to the cupboard to fetch a Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. This Medicare podcast has no excuse, sir. He's often described as mid-century modern Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Well, hello again, ladies and germs. As you just heard, it is Doug Jones, Medicare expert par excellence. Well, he didn't say par excellence, but I'm going to do it. I'm going to toot my own horn every chance I get. And Randy's noisemakers are in there cheering me on. I'm hoping that's why they're making so much noise.
Yes, actually, that was it was metaphorically speaking, applause.
You know, okay,
it was like a bell ringing, like, you know, we have people joining our podcast.
You don't need to explain, just the applause. That's okay. I'll stop right there. I'll take what I can get. Anyway, that was Randy Carson, my broadcast engineer, my spiritual guru, and my metaphysical advisor. He's a happy addition to this podcast that you're listening to, which is the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. And who is the lazy man that we're podcasting to? It's a lazy man or a lazy lady who has to learn about Medicare because they're approaching age 65 or they're approaching retirement age, and they are not happy about having to become Medicare experts. However, that's where we come in. We do the studying so that you don't have to, and with a little bit of information from you, we can give you advice and help you buy and enroll in the protection that you're going to need, and that protection will serve you well the rest of your life. So that's what we do here. And Randy is sitting on the other side of the glass, which is actually two glasses because we're about 1,800 miles apart. I'm in Illinois, and Randy is in beautiful, sunny Arizona, where I long to be. So is everything going okay today, Randy? Is the sun out?
It is the sun out.
Yeah, sorry, that was silly of me, wasn't
Surely
it?
Surely you jest. We are, you may know this, Doug, you probably know this, but the audience may not. We are having the hottest year ever in Arizona. The high temperature in Cave Creek yesterday was, 247 degrees.
And that's Cave Creek, which is up in elevation. Phoenix is even hotter, isn't it?
Yeah. Phoenix is about 6 degrees hotter. So it was about 253 down there yesterday. The pavement was melting. People were stuck in the asphalt. It was incredibly uncomfortable, but I wouldn't have it any other way.
Yeah, I was going to say, in spite of all of that, the people keep coming. The houses keep getting built. And compared to Illinois, it's a busy, busy, kind of a prosperous area.
It is.
People are coming in from all kinds of, other states that don't have the freedom of economic prosperity that Arizona seems to foster. So,
and in reality, as you know, Doug, Arizona in particular is it's not an expensive place to live, you know, in terms of taxes and that kind of thing. I mean, you can obviously buy yourself a pretty good sized mansion in Scottsdale, Arizona, and, you know, a variety of other places. But in terms of the state expenses, it's not bad. Cost of living is not bad.
It's not a tax you to death state. I mean, it has its own little quirks. New car taxes are a little on the high side, but it is a place that at least we hope it stays reasonably free of meddling in our business. And I like that part about Arizona.
Absolutely. When I moved out here, I was you talk about car expense. I moved out here and I was in touch with my local insurance agent, and normally, back in Nebraska, I was used to them quoting insurance to me in terms of a 6-month figure.
Yeah.
And the the insurance guy says, okay, that'll be, you know, X number of bucks. I'm thinking, oh, that's not bad for 6 months. And he goes, no, that's a month.
A day.
Oh. Ooh, ouch. That's a day. That, oh, wow, that's going to leave a mark.
Well, I had a house in Illinois years ago that I was paying about $1,000 a month in property taxes. And, of course, with a bullet, it was going up. But for a while, it hovered around that easy-to-remember number of about $1,000 a month in property taxes. So in 2004, we built our house in Arizona. Got the first property tax bill, and I was pleasantly surprised to see that it was $1,800 for a brand new house of roughly the same value. And I thought, okay, this is pretty good. Now, a couple of years later, that's when the Democrat created economic malaise hit the country. They spent a lot of time talking down George Bush and hence talking down the economy, and they changed the laws about home ownership and put a lot of pressure on the banks, some of which failed. And so that's why I say it was a Democrat-induced recession that occurred in 07 and 08. It hit Arizona really, really hard. And the value of my house went down dramatically. So did the property taxes. That never happens anywhere else that I know of. It certainly never happens in Illinois. My property taxes went from about $1,800 a year to about $900 a year when the value of the house dropped. I couldn't write that check fast enough. I was afraid they'd change their mind.
It must be a mistake. Here,
absolutely.
Let me write. Where do you guys live? I'll bring it down there.
Yeah, I want you to get this thing so once you cash the check, you cannot change your mind again. But the whole thing is that it has stayed low. The taxes have not come anywhere near back to the $1,800 mark where they were when we first built the house. So that seems like a real human, civilized way to treat your residents and your
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. And the other thing, I mean, there are so many things about Arizona I love, and I'm never going anywhere. But having said that, I hear that
Didn't we promise to get after it?
We've got a few odds and ends that we have been remiss in touching base with on the podcast. I'm going to turn it back over to you because you are the master of odds and ends collecting.
Yeah, I am odd enough for the ends to, or I don't know, there's got to be a pun in there someplace, but I've got a whole bunch of stuff that's just separate little items that I've been collecting to talk about, no one of which is worth spending a whole episode on. For instance, I get mail from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois and most other insurance companies. Every one of them includes a page like I just held up for Randy to see. And this page is a lot of gibberish. It's 1.5 pages of languages that I have never encountered in my life and some that I was ordered to study and did not do very well at in school. Starts out with Spanish. Then it goes to Arabic. Goes to Chinese, French, German, and Gujarati, and then Hindi, and Italian, and Korean, and Navajo, Persian, Polish, Russian, Tagalog. I thought it was Tagalog, but it's Tagalog. Urdu, Vietnamese, and I'm using the English translation. These languages, the insurance company feels as though it's a good idea, and I'm inclined to think that they are forced to provide interpreters at the insurance company's expense to anybody who speaks these languages and, or, you know, speaks some other language and they can't read to respond to the questions on the application or whatever. So they say if you or someone you are helping have questions, you have the right to get help and information in your language at no cost, which means they will pay an interpreter. Now, who thought this up? A bunch of damn lawyers. If you and I were to go to one of these countries, let's say China, are they going to have all of their things, their government requirements like insurance and driver's license tests and all that stuff in English that we can deal with? I don't think so. If we go to Persia, are they going to accommodate us? Or Russia? Are they going to do a lot of English things? Are they going to hand us documents that are in English that we can deal with? I don't think so. It just irritates the heck out of me that we're spending tons of money to foster the non-melting pot that America is becoming. If we all speak the same language, I think we'll all have an easier time understanding each other, but the government is not making it. They're not causing that to happen by accommodating all of these fractious minorities. Another little thing, I got a pile of things. I can't decide which of these interesting things that I want to do. There's a thing from Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois. It's a questionnaire about special enrollment periods. And we talked last time about enrolling in Part A, Medicare Part A and Part B, which is a new publication that I found that one can download from the internet. And so it kind of deals with special enrollment period. A special enrollment period is going to be a period where something that's happened in your life causes the law to allow you to have special permission to do something, to enroll in coverage that you wouldn't be able to enroll in without that special thing happening. It could be a move. It could be a birthday when you turn 65. Well, it's not that special, but it could be that your current coverage has like dropped all the doctors that you like to deal with, or maybe they've stopped servicing your county or your area of the country. So special enrollment periods occur, and they mostly affect your ability to enroll in insurance coverage without having to show evidence of good health. So question one, what is a special enrollment period? You can enroll in or change your Medicare plan coverage when certain events happen in your life. For instance, if you move or lose another insurance company, those are the two things, or other insurance coverage. Those are the things I just said. These are called special enrollment periods. You are eligible to sign up for a Medicare Advantage plan, with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois now if your employer is no longer offering you Medicare employer group coverage. Question two, I'm over 65 and I was covered through employer paid insurance, not Medicare. What do I do? And the answer is generally Medicare is available for people age 65 or older. Younger people with disabilities and people with end-stage renal disease, permanent kidney failure. Medicare has two parts, blah, blah, blah. We already knew that. So turns out this thing is four pages of kind of a waste of time, but it does answer questions for agents that are kind of new to the business, meaning if you have somebody who is retired and just lost the employer coverage, what health care options do they have? Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois offers different Medicare Advantage plan options. Oh, this whole thing promotes Medicare Advantage. Good. I don't mind throwing it away. But I saved it because I thought it might have some value, and it turns out it had minimal value. But we need to be aware of special enrollment periods. Now, I'm here to announce that I have a stalker. I didn't want to believe it, and generally speaking, people don't like having stalkers, but I like my stalker. My stalker makes me think. And frankly, I have to believe that he is a guy without a lot of things to do during the day, because every couple of days, I get a message from him asking questions. And I know that I can outlast him because he's going to ask questions until there are no more questions. I've got a stack of paper from this gentleman. And it just occurred to me this morning because another message arrived right before the podcast session. And so I thought I might as well use his very good questions as content for the podcast. So his question today was, here's one for you. This is Steve. Here's one for you. If I get a AH plan G, okay, I think he means a high deductible plan G, or even a regular plan G here in Texas, and if I decide I want to move to, say, Florida, can I keep the same insurance company, or do I need to go through the pre-existing condition junk, whatever that is? Should I pick a company that does business in both places? And my answer is, that's easy. The Medicare supplement you buy in one location is good everywhere you go, in the U.S. and possessions, forever and ever. So that sent him back to the drawing board. Now, prior questions have also been pretty good. So one time he wrote me and said, look, I understand that different insurance companies or different political places, like some states require a different pricing calculation for their Medicare supplement plans. So he says, perhaps you could talk some about pricing. I see that there are three ways they can price a policy: community rating, issue age rating, or attained age rating. And he goes on to say, it seems like attained age would be the worst. Community rating and issue age say the premium won't rise as you get older. However, the fine print says that the premiums can rise from year to year for reasons other than age, such as inflation. What would be some of the other reasons? Because the company is broke and they feel like it? Because they want to give themselves a raise? They've paid off the insurance commission? Well, he's right on the money there. Those three ways of calculating a Medicare supplement premium, the government tells you that those are critically important factors. Also, a bunch of panty waists will tell you that. And Medicare experts that are not really up on the events of the day will say, oh, those are important factors that you must consider carefully. And I've heard podcasts where they say that. And frankly, I've read advice where they say that these are critically important factors that you must consider carefully: community rating, issue age rating, or attained age rating. But let me tell you, what's really going to happen is you're going to buy the product, and then you're going to pay whatever that company needs you to pay in order for them to turn a profit. And I'm not saying this with any malice, because I live in America, the land of profit. I like making a profit, and I want to give a reasonable profit to the people that I deal with. So if I'm buying insurance, I want that insurance company to be profitable, so that if I have a claim, they're there to pay the bills. They're going to live up to the promises they've made to me when I bought their insurance product. So frankly, I don't think profit's a bad thing. I think profit's a good thing. But the insurance companies are going to find a way to weasel. They're going to find a way to manipulate the rating structure that they're using in a particular state in order to collect enough money to remain profitable. And that is as it should be, because otherwise they're going to go out of business and we're going to be uninsured. And the doctors will just be laying the bodies out on the hospital lawn to completely die. Now, out of the corner of my eye, I see Randy looking at the clock like, oh my God, that guy can talk like nobody's business. What the hell is he doing? Nobody's listening anymore. We're just boring the heck out of the audience. So what are the thoughts rolling through your head?
Well, I had this thought takes us back a few minutes in the podcast about all the different languages.
Uh-huh. Yeah, which is now on the floor in my office here.
You probably realize there's linguists that study
those
things.
Oh, sure, and they're now proud government employees, yeah. I'm sure.
Yes, absolutely. And there's, I hold fun facts and I love fun facts. I'm the repository for fun facts. Two years ago, there was a language, I believe, in Africa that was entirely made up of clicks and squeaks. There was no verbalizations as we're used to it.
Are you sure it was Africa, and not Australia? Was it Aborigines in Australia?
It's right. That's right. It was Aboriginal. And there was only like one poor woman left alive in the world that knew how this thing worked. And she died recently because she got tired of talking to herself. She got tired of talking to herself, and she just expired. But now that's a terrible thing, the last of a language to go. But here's the interesting part about that language. They invented that language because it could be heard and understood and communicated over long distances.
Really? Okay, well, so there was an actual reason that makes sense for it.
Yes, they could communicate with this clicking and squeaking concept miles. They could be heard miles.
Well, I got to tell you that there was a segment of the American population that adopted that as a communication device for a short period of time in 1944. The paratroops, the Screaming Eagles, they all had little clickers that made noise, and they were dropped during the night on the in Normandy, not too far from the coast. And in order to identify each other, there was a signal method by which they would use a clicker, and one guy would do one click and the answer would be two clicks or something like that. And so in the movie The Longest Day, one of our paratroopers did the click. He heard a guy walking through the bushes, and so he did his click, and then he heard two clicks, and he stood up and he said, "Ah, okay, good to see you," and took a slug right in the forehead, because the two clicks he heard were the cocking of the German's weapon.
Well, they should have planned it differently.
Yeah, I guess with all the planning we did, there were still flaws that caused some.
And I know we are out of time today, but I want to leave a hanging chad for the future, because I am extremely interested in this next topic. It relates to language and war and codes and all that stuff. The Navajo Code Talker.
Well, as ironically, Navajo, or Diné, as it's termed in their language, was one of the languages that is now laying on my office floor.
Yeah.
And I know most people are very conversant in English, so I don't blame them for it's do-gooding liberals that want to spend our tax money to accommodate people with other languages, and they just throw the Navajo in there. Frankly, I know the Navajo are very conversant in English.
Have you ever heard the story of the Code Talkers?
Oh, yeah, but I want to hear you tell it, because when I tell stories, they tend to go on and on and on.
We'll leave that as a hanging chad, but I am extremely interested in the Navajo Code Talkers. And a lot of people didn't realize what type of a contribution those men made.
They saved lots and lots of American lives in the island hopping campaign in the Pacific. And so I think that'll be a fun thing to talk about. And less fun is the fact that I grew up with a guy who became a college professor. Where else? Oregon. And he is one of these guys that goes and tracks down the last living member of a tribe. I think all of his are African, though.
Yeah.
But he's gone to Africa, and he goes to these villages and these, you know, people that look like they're 102 years old. Yeah. He will learn their language or take it down phonetically or whatever he has to do. He's a professor of African languages.
He finally learns the language, and he goes, "Have you seen Bill?" "No, he died last week." That's terrible. I'm sorry.
But, you know, now he comes back to the States and he tries to talk to other people in that language and nobody knows what the hell he's saying. So what's the point? I don't understand the point. But he was a fun guy to grow up with. He might take umbrage at our laughter, so I'm not going to tell him that we have a podcast episode.
A good friend of mine, speaking of interpreters, a good friend of mine spent the entire Korean War as a Korean interpreter.
Uh-huh.
And so he obviously knew Korean inside and out. And I'll never forget, he landed back in the States. I think he came in through LA. I'm not sure. But anyway, he's still in the mindset. He's in the military. He's an he's actually a Korean interrogator also. So he's running through the airport and he's trying to get, you know, people that, you know, where's the this and that and the other thing. And he doesn't realize that he's speaking Korean. And everybody and their brothers looking at him like, "What part of Mars did you just drop off of?"
And that's the reaction I get, because I speak Oklahoman frequently.
Yeah, Oklahoma. That's slow. That's really close to Korean. It's hard to understand. It's fast, yeah. And you have to be from the area, or you don't get what they're saying.
Exactly right. Exactly right. But well, we got plenty of hanging chads. We could probably skip the Medicare part altogether next episode.
That's right. Well, everybody, thanks again for joining us. I appreciate it. Doug appreciates it. We have so much fun. And really, it's really makes us feel good to give out information that helps you make decisions that are good for you and your family going into the future. So in the meantime, you know, give us a email, give us a subscription, you know, whatever you'd like to do, but definitely go and buy a book. A couple of them, three or four of them, maybe five, six, seven, you know, how many you need to give out to your family. And I'm going to turn it back over to Doug for some final thoughts, and then we'll land the plane.
Well, I'm standing by the post office door waiting for mail to be delivered, and that would be dbj@mlmmailbag.com if you want to write and ask a question or tell us how stupid we are or perhaps tell us how much you're enjoying the podcast. Whatever thoughts occur to you, if you want to send them to us in an email, dbj@mlmmailbag.com. And thank you once again for joining us, and we'll look forward to doing this again real soon.
You have just spent 32 and a half minutes listening to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy from Oklahoma, owner of MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Bye-bye.